When I used to attend conference calls, right at the start, I would do some very obvious bouncing on hello. Like I would say, hello. And by doing that, the whole fear would melt. And that would lead to an increase in fluency. And after that also, I was willing to go into a block. I was willing to stammer.
Stuttering modification and melting the fear away with J.P. Sunda. Today on Stutter Talk. Hey everyone, well, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 324 for March 11th, 2012. And I hope that sound I just heard wasn't my guest fleeing the episode. I am your host, Peter Reitzis in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I have on the line via Skype, J. Prakash Sunda, known to his friends as JP, in India. How's it going, JP?
Hi, Peter. I'm good. How are you?
I am very good. We have a time difference here, so it's early for you and late for me, but we're in good spirits.
Yes, yes. I've just woke up, had my early morning coffee, and I'm all excited to talk to you.
That is great. I've been up all day, had more coffee than any man should, and I'm excited to speak to you. JP is 27 years old and the current coordinator of the Indian Stammering Association. And JP is a freelancer in internet technology. What city or town do you live in India, JP?
I live in Chandigarh, a city in the northern part of India, very close to Himalayas.
Oh, great. My brother-in-law is from Kerala. How close are you to Kerala?
Kerala is actually down south. You can say I am at one extreme and he is at another. So I'm in north, he's in south.
Mm. Well, I like both northern and southern Indian food, so it's all good.
Yes.
So we invited you on the show today, JP, because Stutter Talk is planning a number of episodes on stuttering modification treatment. And I thought it would be great to speak with some people who stutter, who have used stuttering modification. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, but because this is the first episode, I just want to mention a few things to the listeners. In planning this series on stuttering modification, I've been speaking to a lot of people, including the Stutter Talk advisors. And one of our advisors, Luke Danil in Canada, he brought up a really good point. He reminded me that stuttering modification is, quote, a conceptual approach to stuttering intervention rather than a specific treatment, end quote. So what's important about that is stuttering modification treatment means many, many different things to different people, and there just isn't one type of stuttering modification approach. But I did want to let the listeners know that very generally speaking, there's two main avenues or targets for stuttering modification. One of the avenues is to approach your stuttering rather than avoid it. So by stuttering openly, stuttering on purpose, by advertising, which is telling people you stutter, or even by using a little humor to make a joke about your stuttering as a way to get it out in the open. And then the second part of stuttering modification is what some people have referred to as fluent stuttering or stuttering easily. And the classic stuttering easily tools are preparatory sets, pullouts, cancellations. And stuttering modification tools are often attributed to Charles Van Riper and to others. Thank you for sitting through my intro, JP. So I've got a bunch of questions to ask you. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
When we were speaking via email about stuttering modification, you said that you had a really hard time with your first job as a stutterer. So could you just tell us a little bit about what was so hard about stuttering at your first job?
Yes, I joined this company in the year 2007, and I had just passed out from college. And college, actually, I had avoided going to college most of the time, and I used to also avoid any kind of interactions in the college. But when I passed out and I got this job, which was also a surprise, actually. I was not expecting to get a job. So once I got the job, I was very, very happy. And when I joined it, for the first time, there was no escape door. Like, someone was paying me to come to office to get the job done. And as you know, most of us work in teams. So to complete my job, I also had to interact with my team members. And sitting, actually, the first thing was sitting with so many people around. That was very unnerving for me. Usually, I was comfortable only when I was with one or two more people. But then I had full floor full of people, bunch of people talking to each other, and so many people passing by. Like, that was very unnerving. Then I had my own desk phone like that, and in my cubicle, four more people used to sit. So that was terrifying, actually, since whenever I used to talk on my mobile, I always used to go to a room where no one would hear me, or far from where people would be able to see that I stutter. So I was not able to do that also.
If I could just jump in just real quick. So you avoid stuttering as much as you can in college. Then you graduate, yes, and you get a job. And now you're sitting at a desk with several other people sitting near you, people walking by, phones are ringing, and you have to talk. What happened? I mean, did you just stutter a lot? Did you change words? Did you refuse to answer the phone? I mean, what did you do?
I acted as if I was not interested in the job. So I kind of retreated back. And that also affected my career at the start. Like, my manager thought maybe I was a dumb guy, or I actually don't know what he thought about me. But the way he used to interact with me, it seems like he was not very, very pleased with me.
So, I mean, at this point in your life, had you ever spoken to somebody else about stuttering?
Yes. I had been to two speech therapists, once when I was 16 and another one when I was going through this phase. So, like, this phase was so unnerving, so I again started looking for a speech therapist, and I found one in the town where I was at that time, Pune.
So you see, you're working your job, it's really hard with stuttering, and you find a speech therapist. Did the speech therapist help you?
I would say yes and no, both. Yes, because first time I had met a speech therapist who focused on the emotional aspect, on the fear. And first time someone said to me that it's okay to stutter. But that was it, actually. After that, most of the sessions became repetitive. And even though I used to take appointments around 1 week back, the fellow was not very professional. After half an hour, he used to say, "Jay, it seems like you are doing good. I have another client waiting." So.
But let's just remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, here with J.P. Sunda in India. So, I mean, what did you do? Did you keep the job? I mean, what happened next?
Yes, that speech therapy experience made me realize one thing, that I'll have to stop running around looking for people who will help me. Eventually, I will have to take the onus on my own, and I will have to find a solution on my own. And then from my first speech therapy experience when I was a teenager, I learned one very good thing. In that speech therapy, every weekend we used to have a group speech therapy session. So what I learned from there was that if I have a bunch of people who stammer and who understand the problem that I am going through, then that environment is very helpful in a way where I can go out and practice and experiment, where I can experiment with my speech. I can, even though like in that speech therapy session also the focus was on fluency, and I was also thinking on the same lines, like I never thought that I could stammer openly with a bunch of people who themselves stammer. So there also I never thought that stuttering is allowed. but that group gave you a nice feeling where you were at more peace. So then I started looking for a self-help group in Pune.
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep jumping in, but I just want to point out how stunning and important what you said is. So you're in a speech therapy group where you all are practicing fluency. You're practicing not stuttering. And what you're taking away from that is just how great it is to be around other people who stammer, other people who stutter. And, you know, I don't know if you heard the shows at Stutter Talk that we just did on fluency shaping recently, but I pointed out in some of these fluency shaping studies, I dare say most of them, researchers are looking at fluency and they're not taking into account how potentially hugely important it is for other for stutterers to be around other stutterers. And so I'm just so glad you brought that up. So, okay, so you're looking for a self-help group in India. What did you find?
I searched a lot, and accidentally I happened to come across Dr. Satyendra Srivastava from TISA. I read his interview on Stuttering Hub, which is run by Hiten Vyas. So,
and just so our listeners know, TISA is the Indian Stammering Association, and Sachin's actually been a guest on Stutter Talk. But again, please, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Not a problem, Peter. You don't need to apologize.
Okay.
Yes. So I went through his interview, and I saw that he mentioned that there was a self-help group in Pune. So I immediately wrote an email to him. He responded very promptly. He gave me the contact details. I immediately sent an email to these guys. But the unfortunate thing was that I think most of them were very busy, and there were three guys. So the person to whom I had written the email, he was not in India, and he didn't have access to his email ID where I had sent. So it took a long for me to get the response. I got the response after 1 month.
And when you did get the response, I mean, you're now the coordinator of the Indian Stammering Association, so something good must have happened, right?
Yes, yes. The good thing for me was that all these guys were busy, so again, I was on my own. And Sachin suggested that, why don't you start a self-help group? And at that time, the idea was quite absurd, actually, because I always used to think that a self-help group has to be coordinated, facilitated, and started by someone who has completely recovered, who has achieved 100% fluency. That was my image. So it was absurd at that time, but the pain was so much that I had no option. So So I thought, okay, I will do it.
Oh, so you, that's so awesome, man. That is just so totally cool. Yeah, you know, I never thought self-help groups, I mean, when I first heard about self-help groups, I never thought they had to be run by somebody completely recovered. In fact, I had the opposite fear. I had a fear that I would go to a group and everybody would stutter way too much. That I'd be around people who just really, really stuttered, and that would make me really a stutterer.
For me, it was like, if I start a self-help group and if I start approaching other people who stammer, they would judge me on my stuttering. They would say that since you haven't cured yourself, then how do you plan to start a self-help group and help others? I thought they won't take me seriously. So that was my mindset at that time.
So interesting. So you did start the self-help group.
The whole change started from there. I was in a new city, and the only friends and acquaintances were at work. So the only people to whom I could tell that I'm starting a self-help group were at work. And we had an internal bulletin board, so I thought of posting it there. You won't believe that it took me the whole day to post it. I had written it that I am planning to start a self-help group of the Indian Stammering Association. I wrote it down and I just saved it, because I thought my colleagues, people who are sitting next to me, they will read it and they will think negative of me. But eventually, before going home, I posted it. And I continuously, I think, posted it for more than 2 or 3 weeks, and then I got one response.
Mm-hmm. And what happened when you got that one response?
We met that other colleague of mine. He also used to stammer, and we met, and he promised that let's meet every week. And he never showed up at any of the meetings.
Wow. I hope it got better after that.
Yes. So at that time, actually, what I did was, like, I approached these people whose contacts Sachin gave me. And this time what I did, I called them. Previously, I had sent an email and I had called only one person whose phone was switched off. And this time I thought I will try all the phone numbers. And when I called them, I told them that I have already started a self-help group and we have 2 members. So
that's great. Oh, that's great.
So like these guys became excited, you know, like when someone is telling them that and it was true, we had met once. So
all right.
Yes, like me and the other person, we had met at least once. So I told them, and finally we met, and the good thing was these guys were in touch with a lot of other people who stammer in Pune, and we had our first meeting and in which there were 5 or 6 people, I think.
Wow, that's really great. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with J.P. Sunda. That's J. Prakash Sunda. And let's start to talk about some of the things you did to really face your stuttering and to reduce your fear of speaking and stuttering. You wrote me that you started to use very obvious and very prominent bouncing, and that bouncing was like striking gold. What did you do?
As we started meeting in Pune, we thought of having a communication workshop in Pune. So I was looking for a venue, and the dates were approaching. Since we had already finalized the dates, we had invited Sachin, he had it, tickets booked. So I was not able to find a venue, and I called up Sachin, and he told me that if you want, we can postpone it. But then he also told one thing, that why don't you try asking your HR manager if your company can provide their premises, since it was on a weekend, and weekend it's off. So if we can use their premises. So that was the first time I was able to discuss my stuttering very openly with my colleagues and my HR on a face-to-face basis. Like previously, I had posted it, and I have mentioned it once in a while, but to get this venue, I had to discuss it continuously. Like I had to talk to more people than I had ever talked about, and I got the approval, and I liked the concept of TISA so much that I took a 6 month sabbatical.
Oh wow!
And yes, to work with the TISA, and then when I went there, Sachin gave me your book, 50 Great Activities, and in that, you had mentioned one activity of bouncing, and there Sachin and they had another speech therapist, Vijay. They first time showed me bouncing. Like me and Vijay, we were at a restaurant, and Vijay bounced and ordered coffee. And even though Vijay didn't stammer, he was a SLP, and just to make me realize that it's okay to stammer, he bounced. And I felt very ashamed. Like I didn't even want the waiter to know that I was with Vijay.
Yeah.
So that was the starting point when someone showed me bouncing in real life.
So, and they were using bouncing like a voluntary stuttering to sort of put their stuttering out there to reduce the fear of stuttering?
Yes. So like he ordered it like ch, 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 chai. So chai is Hindi word for tea.
Yeah, actually, it's a very, very well-known word here, I think, because Starbucks sells chai tea. But that's neither here nor there. So was that the first time you saw somebody use voluntary or fake stuttering?
Yes. And I was very ashamed of myself at that time. Like the whole approach till that time had been on fluency.
So how did you get from that point of being ashamed of stuttering and ashamed of voluntary stuttering to thinking that it was gold and to really wanting to do it a lot?
The good thing was that when I was working there at this NGO, Samagra, who was helping TISA, the Indian Stammering Association, during the initial days, we used to use their premises for our SHGME meetings. So at that time, none of the people working at Samagra forced me to use bouncing. That was the good thing. They never forced me. They never told me to use bouncing, but they continuously did it whenever I was around. Whenever we used to go out, they used to do it. And after a while, on my own, I started realizing that if these guys are doing it and they sound so confident and so comfortable with their stammer, so maybe even I can try it. And then one day I did. I don't remember the first time, but it was during those 6 months that I tried it first time.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is I just... When you were telling that story, I was trying to think of the first time I used voluntary stuttering, and I can't remember it either. You'd think you'd remember something like that, right?
Yes.
So you tried voluntary stuttering. Did you start doing it a lot? Do you still do it? Why don't you tell us a little bit more?
I I actually talk to a lot of people who stammer. So I have to show them what it is. Like, a lot of people call me when we meet in our SHG. So I have to demonstrate it many times. And generally, nowadays, I use it whenever I get into a block and there's no sound coming out. I start producing the sound by repeating the first syllable one or two times, and then I move ahead.
So let me see if I get this straight. So when you're blocking and you don't have any sound, you use a little voluntary stuttering to get the sound out. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. I pause and I again start by repeating the first sound and get some momentum, and that's how.
Now, that's really interesting, and I mean, all these things are related, but some people listening might say to themselves, oh, that sounds like pull-out, which is might sound something like this, when you get stuck on a word and you work through it. And some people might say, oh, that sounds like a cancellation, yeah, where, you know, you stutter hard, then you fight through it, and then you stop for a second or two, and then you say it in an easier way. Can I model cancellation just one more time?
Yes.
So, great. So I'll do a cancellation on my name. My name is Peter. But, you know, it's also, you know, we can say it's a way of using some voluntary stuttering. I mean, all these things are related. Let's take a quick break and come on back. And I want to ask you about some comments you made about how using stuttering modification led to having increased fluency.
Hey, everyone. My name is Taro Alexander, and I am the founder and director of Camp Our Time, a one-of-a-kind sleepaway summer camp for children who stutter ages 8 to 18. Launched in 2008, Camp Our Time infuses a traditional camp experience, including sports, swimming, horseback riding, crafts, and more, with arts programming that is designed to improve the confidence and communication skills of kids who stutter. At Camp Our Time, kids from across the nation and abroad come together to simply kick back, relax, and have fun while gaining valuable friendships, validation, and encouragement to pursue their dreams. Camp Our Time also welcomes the participation of siblings, cousins, and friends of children who stutter ages 8 to 18, providing them with a unique opportunity to learn how to better provide year-round support for their relative or friend who stutters. Camp Our Time has affordable, all-inclusive tuition and need-based financial aid to ensure that no child is turned away due to their family's inability to pay. To learn more about this unique summer camp for children who stutter, or to enroll your child today, please visit www.campourtime.org. or call 212-414-9696.
This is David Mitchell. I'm the author of the book Black Song Veen and a patron of the British Stammering Association, and you are listening to Stutter Talk.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter writes this in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, here with J.P. Sunda, a person who stammers and the coordinator of the Indian Stammering Association. Thanks again for joining us, J.P. You have time for some more questions?
Yes, yes.
Great. So I want to ask you some questions about how your work with stuttering modification led to what you have referred to as increased fluency. But before we get there, some of the listeners hearing you talk right now on Stutter Talk, they might say to themselves, oh, JP doesn't stutter that much. A few years ago, did you stutter a lot more than you're stuttering now?
Actually, now also, sometimes I stutter a lot. And as all of us know, like, stuttering is very variable. It's hugely, like, the hallmark of stuttering is variability, and that is why it is such a big problem. Like, I'm talking to you, and I'm talking with ease, but then I go out after 5 minutes, and I go to a shop, and I have to ask for something, and I will get blocked. So that happens with me also. And if I talk about my past, I would say yes, I used to stutter more. It was because I was trying not to stutter, and that was counterproductive. So that was the reason. Like, it looked like I used to stutter more.
So I'm going to read something back to you that you wrote me that I think is very interesting and very powerful. So you wrote me a few days ago, and I'm going to quote you, quote, "My increase in fluency is largely due to my willingness to stammer openly and talk about my stuttering openly," end quote. So explain that to the listeners. I mean, because stuttering modification is about facing your stuttering and not avoiding and allowing yourself sometimes to stutter. How did your work lead towards an increase in fluency?
So when I was working with Samagra, the NGO which was helping TISA, so we used to go out to schools, and we used to do presentations on stuttering, and we had a SLP also. So he used to arrange group speech therapy sessions. And it was at that time that I had started using bouncing. And for 6 continuous months, I did it. There was a time after a few months that I was asked to go and approach schools on my own, talk to principals, talk to teachers. As I was doing it on a continuous basis, like unintentionally, I became so open about my stutter by talking about it at so many schools with so many teachers and children, and by bouncing a lot, that there was an increase in fluency.
It's probably hard to understand just how powerful that can be until you try it. I mean, until you actually stutter on purpose, you might not know what it could do for you.
Like, just to give an example, like, when I returned back, and I used to attend conference calls. When I used to attend conference calls, right at the start, I would do some very obvious bouncing on hello. Like, I would say hello, and by doing that, the whole fear would melt, and that would lead to an increase in fluency. And after that also, I was willing to go into a block. I was willing to stammer. And I always used to make it a point that I would say what I want to say, and I would not switch words.
Wow, yeah, that is so important, and I mean, frankly, it's very close to my experience too. So I think we have a lot in common there.
And right now also, for the people who may be thinking that I don't stammer, I'm putting in these bounces once in a while whenever I remember.
Yeah.
Actually, it's all because right now also I'm willing to stammer openly. I'm willing to go into a block. I'm willing to be in a situation where there may not be any sound coming out. I'm willing to be in a situation where I may not be able to say something the way I would want to say it. So I'm willing to be in all such situations. So that is why I'm having more comfortable now, and more comfort and more peace, I think, brings more fluency.
Wow, I personally agree with that statement very much. And I think I forgot to do it today, but I usually start every Stutter Talk off by saying something like, and as always, I'm using some good voluntary stuttering. And I was at a stuttering workshop a few days ago, and I was speaking to one of the presenters who stutters, and he's been presenting a long time. And I said to him, are you going to use some fake stuttering when you present, because you're a very fluent person right now? And he said to me, no, I'm just going to go up there and be me. And then he asked me, well, do you use fake stuttering when you present? And I said, yeah, I still do. And he said something like, well, you just have to be you. And sort of when I got home that night, I thought to myself, well, that is me. You know, I'm the guy who thinks it's really, really important to use some fake stuttering when I'm not stuttering, because it's okay to stutter. And I need to always remind myself of that. And I think it's important to remind the listeners of that too. I just said a mouthful. So,
yes. And sometimes it's all the more important that we do it, because as it happened with me when I was at Samagra, this SLP was fluent. Dr. Sachin had a very good fluency, but then also they did it, and when they did it, they influenced me, and they told me indirectly that it's okay to stammer. So when we do it, you never know, you may change a life.
Oh, very powerful. That is just so super awesome cool. Yeah, I'm down with that completely. So you've done a lot of fake stuttering. Do you tell people that you stutter? Is that a big part of facing your stuttering?
Yes. Yes, yes. And some people ask me, like, do you do it all the time? No, not all the time. I decide on my own, like, when to do it and when not to do it. Like, there are some times when you just need to ask someone a very small thing, and then you have to move ahead. So then I don't see any point in telling. But when I have this, sometimes when I have this fear of stuttering, because as you know, once in a while that thing just shows up, you become nervous. So there I make sure that I do it. So whenever there is fear, I make sure that I do it.
So when you have some fears of speaking and stuttering, you might tell somebody that you are a stutterer.
Yes.
So let's remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk featuring J.P. Sunda in India. And as I said at the top of the show, you know, very broadly speaking, stuttering modification can be broken down into two major facets, which is avoiding avoidance, so facing your fears, and then using some stuttering easily tools, sometimes referred to as stuttering fluently, and I modeled some of them earlier, like you using a pull out or a smooth out to work through a stutter. How important were such tools to you? Have you used them a lot? Do you find them valuable, or do you not really use them?
I use one tool a lot, and that is bouncing. Like I repeat the first syllable, the first sound, like I am j, j, j. So I use it a lot, and it helps me to stammer in a more easier way. So that is something which attracted me to using this, because previously I was stuttering with a lot of force, with a lot of struggle. So when I started using it, I felt that talking was becoming more easier with bouncing, and it was also a way to desensitize myself. So it was helping me in both.
I like that, a very streamlined approach. So you're using bouncing to stutter on purpose, and you're using bouncing to stutter easily. Would you use bouncing to bounce out of a stutter too?
Yes.
Now, when you use bouncing with your... Are you married?
No, not right now.
Okay, so... If you use bouncing with a friend...
By the way, I will give you the phone number of the girl if you can convince her.
Oh, wow. Okay. We've never had anyone on Stutter Talk. So you know what we can do? We can call her up and you can use some bouncing and propose to her on air.
Yes, but maybe some other time.
It'd be great, like reality stuttering podcasting. Yes. That'd be great.
So whenever I plan to do it, I will be in touch with you, Peter.
All right. So if you're talking to a friend, to a girlfriend, to somebody who you know, when you use bouncing to stutter easily, do people mind it? Do they not mind it? Has anybody said anything to you about it?
Till now, I can't think of any bad experiences. But sometimes, yes, people have that weird look on their face. Sometimes people smile. And for me personally, I think that also helps me. Like once in a while, if I get those bad experiences or those weird looks, I think it helps me more, because it helps me to also help me to be at peace with it helps me to learn how to handle such reactions. So such reactions are no more a thing that will come as a surprise and may take me back to the hole out of which I've come. So once in a while, if such experiences happen, I'm really glad that they happen.
I think that's a very productive way to look at it. I'm going to model a stuttering modification tool now called a preparatory set, where I prepare, where I anticipate stuttering, so I prepare to stutter easily. So it's sort of a preemptive strike. And I've been stuttering on L words recently. So I'm going to use a preparatory set on the word liberation. Because when you wrote me, you used that word. So the listeners might not have heard me stutter on liberation, but I just stuttered on it twice. And what I did was I prepared to say the word by very lightly, and that was the third one, lightly, that L, by lightly putting my tongue up to the roof of my mouth and preparing not to push, because I could feel the tension, and I just knew I was going to stutter on it. Okay, so to the topic at hand. You wrote me that stuttering modification has been liberating for you, and I love that word. And you wrote that using voluntary stuttering and talking openly about stuttering to desensitize yourself to these fears of stuttering were liberating. Liberating, yeah. Great word.
Yes.
What did they liberate you from? What are you doing now that you didn't do before you found stuttering modification?
So previously, like, I was always anxious. I was always afraid. Like, I became a very timid person. So, like, and it was very hard to live that way. It was like if I had a meeting after lunch, it would be very hard to eat the lunch. So it was like that. And then when you're ordering lunch, that itself was very stressful. Like, you will think, what do you want to eat? And then you will think, will I be able to say it? But after stuttering modification, if I wanted to eat something and if I knew that I may stammer on that word, what I would do is I would go and stammer on my own. I would do it anyhow. And if I had a call after lunch, I knew that I am going to stammer, and it's okay to stammer. So I would enjoy my lunch.
That's awesome. Is there anything about stuttering modification that I should ask you about that I haven't asked you about?
Actually, even though I was doing all these things, life was still very heavy, and that was very surprising. Like, I was becoming so much comfortable with my stammer, and I was open with it. I had started a self-help group at my workplace also. I was so open that our company started helping me. They started helping me in using their premises for any communication workshop of TISA, of any TISA event. So I was doing all these things, but then also, like, there was a sense of heaviness, and
Well, I'm sorry, what do you mean by heaviness?
There was my past with which I was still not comfortable. I was still unhappy that I had spent most of my life till then by living it in the wrong way, and I also used to blame my father for a long time, and that was also, I had never faced it. So it was at that time, like, I came to know about Eckhart Tolle. So that was another thing which has helped me.
I didn't get that word. You came to know about
Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle is a spiritual leader.
Okay.
From, yes, a spiritual guru from Canada. So he wrote this famous book, Power of Now. Like, and the basic philosophy is living in this moment, and life is only this moment.
And how has that helped you face your life and your stuttering, or your stuttering and your life?
Like, first time when I listened to all that, it didn't make any sense. But I think when I was ready for it and I listened back to it again, I could see that past doesn't exist, and also whatever I did, whatever my father did, and whatever happened at that time, that was the best thing that all of us could have done. And basically, by listening to him more and more, I could see that human existence is not perfect, and pain is also there, suffering is also there for a reason, because it helps us become more conscious, and it helps us be more authentic human beings.
It's hard to let go.
Yes, and that was one thing, like, which I was trying, like, I forgive myself, I forgive everybody, but it was not working. And I remember one of his talks I was listening to, and he said that never works. And I said, yes, it never works. It never worked with me. So the way he explained it was, like, whatever I did or anyone else did, there was nothing personal in it. Like, it was just unconscious human behavior. And it's only when we attach that person to that unconscious behavior that it's hard to let go. But once we see that, there was nothing personal in it.
Well, I like that a lot, that statement, you know, it doesn't work. And I'd like to think, well, when we started talking about stuttering modification, I mean, part of the reason that so many of us are drawn to that is that we're doing things that don't work. you know, and how long can we keep doing things that don't work for us? And I'm not talking, just so I'm clear, I'm not talking about fluency, you know, just so I'm clear about that. So yeah, doing, you know, if something's not working, look at it, try something else. So I really value what you just shared. And I think that's a nice positive place to end things. So I want to thank you, JP Sunda, for joining us on Stutter Talk. And I really hope we can get you back on the program sometime.
Sure, Peter. I would love to talk to you.
And I should let people know, for your comments or questions or thoughts, send an email, stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com. Until next time, JP, talk to you later.
Thanks, Peter. Bye.
Carnations, red roses, and yellow daffodils. Don't forget the flowers someday, I know you will. Displays of affection and all good intentions, why don't you just send me